Hi, welcome back into WEEI. Butch Stearns.
Don't step on the BC fight song. What's wrong with you?
I'm supposed to let it play out.
No,
to the end.
To sing with me. That's what you're supposed to do. Na 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 na. I know the first four words. For Boston.
The dulcet tones of Steve D'Ossi. That's what you hear in your ear, in your car, wherever you are. I'm Butch Stearns. We're here outside Alumni Stadium for a big event. We'll take your phone calls. We're here up until 7:30. Of course, you know the number, 617-779-7937. If you'd like to stop by, if you're coming to the game, we're right outside Gate E at Alumni Stadium. And, of course, we'll talk a lot more about this game. But let's touch on a few other things, Steve. Gronk out for the Patriots, third time in 4 weeks. They have the bye week coming up. Clearly, they're being, I would think, cautious for the right reasons, maybe a little overcautious. They want him to get as much rest as possible. And as always, they want a guy like Gronk healthy for the end of the year. Are you surprised he's not playing this week?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, we were talking about this the other day, and it just makes sense. You've got the bye week coming up. And nobody in the Patriots organization will say it, but you still should be able to beat the Titans without Gronk. That's an underlying current that nobody will ever speak to, but it's the truth. Get him ready for the long run. Get him ready for December football, playoffs football. You'd much rather this game, in terms of Gronk being there, it's not meaningless, but it's not an imperative right now. Just get him healthy, get him ready, make him as close to 100% as you can, and, you know, 3 weeks off, that's not a bad thing in the middle of the season.
How about Sony Michel? I mean, the last couple weeks to me have reinforced a couple of things. Depth is always so key. Mm-hmm. I honestly, not the Kenyon Barner is a barn burner, but I honestly surprised they didn't work him in a little more, because there's a domino effect. Yeah, they got the Cordarrelle Patterson thing going, right, and I'm sure that's fine. Everybody's waiting for him to get blown up because of his pad level and everything else. The guy's actually a pretty big guy if you ever look at him. And he's fast as heck. But there's, you know, Sony Michel, I think, has become a key guy in this offense in a first year team.
It's hard to say that about a young guy who's played in basically three games, but four games. But I think you're absolutely right, Bush. I think he's a guy that they look to for hard yards with the ability to maybe break it a little bit.
Well, they've made him a key guy just by the number of
absolutely
carries they give him. He's stepped right into Deion Lewis's role from
last year.
Absolutely
right. And then, you know, you talked about the domino effect before. Now, all of a sudden, if James White has to be that guy that takes more of the running plays, how quickly did you hold your breath when he was limping last week? Or he's just like, he came back in and seemed fine, but
right,
and hasn't missed anything this week. But the fact is, if you're going to have James White, one of the best receiving backs in the league, carry the ball, you know, even 15 times, that's you want, if he's touching the ball 15 times, you want 10 of those to be catches,
right,
you know. And Sony Michel allows you to do that. I think that he might be another one of those guys that they're just saying, okay, well, look, you get healthy. You got this week off after this. You'll maintain your treatments, and you'll take it from there and be ready for the stretch run towards the playoffs.
617-779-7937. Again, we're outside of Alumni Stadium. We'll talk about this BC game with you as an event, as a moment, possibly on the Boston sports scene. Could be. You know, been a lot of them for BC over the years. David Gordon is a legendary hero now because of a field goal that he kicked in Notre Dame Stadium. Matt Ryan played in some big games. Of course, the miracle in Miami with Doug Flutie back in 1984. I want to go back to the Patriots a second. That sort of leads us into this game. I think, to me, one of the most fascinating storylines when Sunday does roll around is Mike Vrabel, the head coach, going against Tom Brady, the quarterback, for the simple reason that they're such great friends. They have great respect for each other. Brady has always said he was one of his favorite teammates.
Yep.
And as you know, Steve, I think better than most of the average fans, when Vrabel was on the other side of the ball, like the competition that went on in practice between them, the busting balls that they used to do with each other, Vrabel against Brady in practice, was a big part of their success. And Vrabel was a unique guy. He was one of those guys that could give it to you in just a different way than other teammates. A smart player, as we all know. I'm very intrigued with him as the head coach against Brady. I think Brady's going to have his way with Tennessee, but I'm intrigued by that because I don't think a lot of people know Brady as well as Mike Vrabel knows him.
Well, you're probably right about that, but now
we still got to do it.
Getting that message, get that message across to your teammates and learning how to coach. Now, he's shot his way up very quickly to a head coaching position, and I think there's a lot of hope for the guy because he was considered as good a player as he was. He was a very cerebral player too. He was one of the guys that was always where he was supposed to be, understood, not just, and this is something Belichick's always done, you're not allowed to just know your responsibility. You have to know how your responsibility fits into everything around you. You can't just say, I'm a linebacker, here's what I'm going to do. You're going to say, okay, I'm a linebacker, but we're playing stack cover two, so now all of a sudden I got to make sure that tight end down the middle, I got to make sure that the safeties know what's going on, I got to make sure that, you know, you can't just sit there and play your position. You got to play the defense. And
Vrabel understood it better than most.
I think he did. Guys like him and Teddy Bruschi were perfect examples of guys who understood the big picture. And there's a number of a ton of other players that played defense for Bill that understood that. That was the biggest difference I saw between coming from Dallas to New York is that you were expected not only to know your stuff inside out, but you had to.
You're talking about when you got to the Giants.
When I went to the Giants and Bill Belichick was there, the idea was that you had to know how you fit in. And what happened, and it took me a little while, what happened is now you understood why, how, and what you were supposed to do in terms of the big picture. So when something crazy happened on the field, you could adjust accordingly. You didn't have to worry about just your own little tunnel vision of what you're seeing. You knew that everybody around you was seeing the same
thing. Well, I think if people are really listening to what you're saying, you just did as good a job as I've ever heard of explaining what do your job means.
Right.
It means knowing what other people's jobs are so you can do your job. So it becomes the glove thing. You're not one finger. You're part of a glove, right? They're all part of it.
Yep.
Vrabel was one of the guys I got to know pretty well. We golfed a couple times, and he told me a story one day. I remember saying to him, because I was a Parcells guy like everybody else, and as a football guy, I was like, oh, I'd run through a wall for that guy. But I didn't feel like, even though I got to know Bill doing a radio show with him, that Bell was that type of guy. And I said, what is it about Belichick? And this is a story Vrabel told me. It's a quick one. He said, but we were playing Miami, and Bill comes to me, and he would always do this as the game plan got put in. He'd give you the three things you needed to do to win the football game, both individually and as a team. And he comes to me, and he says, you're going to take an inside rush from the left end all game long for three quarters. And Vrabel says, I'm going to get my butt kicked all game long. He goes, exactly. He goes, but you know why you're doing this? Because in the fourth quarter, when that right tackle gets tired, he's going to take an inside step. We're going to run a stunt. You're going to run a loop, and you're going to make the big sack of the game.
Yep.
He says, doesn't it play out exactly the way he said it was? So after that, he had the hook and mouth thing. He said, that, you know, what do I do now, Bill? What do I need to do? But all that while, what you just said, Vrabel would always tell me, Ted Johnson would say the same thing, that Bill would challenge you not only to know everything about your opponent, but to know everything the rest of your teammates are doing.
Right.
So you did your job and had faith that the guys beside you were going to do yours. You didn't have to do more than you needed to do, because if you did, it broke down.
Right.
Everything broke down after
that. The pressure was not simply from the coaching staff to do your job. The pressure was from your teammates that you were studying as hard as everybody else to understand how and what we were trying to accomplish. And the side part of that is that it made you know your position even better. It made you understand. It's one thing to just have that, like I said before, tunnel vision about what your assignment is, but it became much easier to understand and learn and know when you understood that you were part of something. And I can remember very clearly seeing in my head a situation where I saw something and I knew right away that Pepper Johnson right next to me saw the exact same thing. And it was maybe even just a nod or a look. We saw the exact same, didn't have to say a word, and we were able to blow the play up. And that happened any number of times because guys were duty bound to understand what was going on around them. And Bill Belichick, I remember when I first got the starting job in New York with the Giants, we're watching film, and I'm laying on the floor in front of the big screen. Half my job was to keep LT awake during meetings. So
or get him a pillow.
Yeah. So no. He had his own pillow. He brought his own. Belichick's saying, "Hey, Steve, what do you think about such and such?" I'm like, "Yeah, Coach, whatever you need." He stops the video, turns the lights on. He goes, "What the hell do you mean? What do I need? Whatever I need." I'm like, "Coach, you asked me to do it. I'll do whatever I can to do it." He goes, "That's not what I asked you. I asked you what you think about it."
Right.
And I'd never been asked that by a coach. I'd never been asked that by a coach, and I didn't know what to say. And he saw me sitting there, you know, fortunately I you know, I didn't have some wise ass remark like I'm used to doing, but he said, if you're not, you have to be honest with me. If you're not comfortable with this, or if you think you can do something better, let me know, because we can work this out. It's not a matter of me telling you where to go, what to do. It's a matter of us working together to do what's best for everybody. And wow. and it was you know, it was an eye opener for me, because that's the way he, part of why he's been such the best coach in the history of the NFL.
Well, it must have been fun for you too, because you'd never been challenged that way up to that point, had you?
Well,
it was different, wasn't it?
When Tom Landry and his staff, Gene Stallings, great coach, national champion in Alabama after it was done with the Cowboys, they came with the game plan on Wednesday morning, and it was like Moses coming from the mountain with the Ten Commandments, ye shall do such and such. You know, with Bill Belichick, it was like, you know, we're thinking of this. We want to do this. This is what we're, you know, what do you think? And he's asking, and I'm like, why are you asking my opinion? You got Carl Banks, LT, and Pepper Johnson in this starting linebacker crew. Why would you ask my opinion? That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It's the do your job thing, because right. Your role is just as important as theirs.
Well, maybe.
Well, no,
but no, I mean, know what you mean.
Right.
In the big picture. Right. In the big picture, he had to have 11 guys doing exactly what he wanted. And Mike Vrabel, you know, getting back to the original subject, Mike Vrabel was the epitome of that. He would do whatever he had to do to help his teammates, make his teammates better, to do whatever they needed. And once you understand something like that, now all of a sudden you have leeway to make adjustments yourself. And there was any number of, I'd say, you know, no D lineman would do it, because they get their hands in the dirt and they wouldn't bother. But there wasn't a corner, a safety, or a linebacker that would hesitate to make an adjustment, make an audible defensively, if they saw something they want. And normally, there were two or three guys yelling the same adjustment at the same time, because we all saw the same thing. So Mike Vrabel learned at the foot of the best. And it's amazing to me that a player of his caliber and his mental capacity was misused in Pittsburgh for that long. I mean, the there's no doubt that as soon as he got here, you could see that he was a player, a very, very
well,
good
Vrabel
player.
Was, I would argue, if not the one of the ones that started it all for Belichick in New England. But as you're telling us with personal stories, it was for Belichick, it was long before that. It was with the Giants and other things. But when he came to New England, think of he saw Mike Vrabel as a backup player in Pittsburgh.
Right.
But saw the type of guy that he could be.
Right.
Now, to my recollection, there were types of guys that Belichick brought in. Not only that guy that was underused in another system, but there was the Bobby Hamiltons of the world, the Anthony Pleasants of the world, the Dave Maggots of the world, the guys that he had had another, and that was Parcells, too, that was part of the whole thing. But Vrabel, you could argue, was one of those guys that started it all, saw his full potential because Belichick saw what he thought he could be in his system. Right?
Absolutely. And then there's any number of draft choices, a guy like Teddy Bruschi that nobody could actually figure out. Because remember, he was a NCAA all-time leader in sacks coming out of Arizona. And he
He went from a hand-in-the-ground guy to a, hey, we're going to have you stand up and then play inside linebacker, Teddy, in the NFL.
So, I mean, the idea, a lot of coaches and a lot of GMs didn't have that foresight to say, this kid is a football player. He's not just a guy that rushes the passer. Yes, if you ask him to do that in college, he'll do it better than as well as or better than anybody.
Well, and look at the rookie year he had in 1996 in the position Parcells and Belichick put him in to succeed that year when they played the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely right. Well, when you look at the at a guy like Vrabel in terms of his coaching, it's not easy to duplicate what Bill Belichick has done. And we've seen how many guys try it now?
Right.
I mean, we've seen Billy O'Brien, Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia struggling up in Detroit.
Eric Mangini.
There's a bunch of guys because with Belichick, it was a scenario where he understood the entirety of the thing. He understood everything that was going on, and he had a way of getting other people to understand it. Now, that's a huge thing for a coach. To get guys to understand what you're trying to accomplish and how and why you're doing it, and that was a crazy thing to imagine. You don't have to tell me why. I know the why is because we want to hit them and not let them score. It was more than that. It was more than that. It was the why was about you know, hey, maybe to your point with Vrabel, maybe we're setting something up for three quarters.
Right.
Maybe we're holding this out in our back pocket and we'll drop it right at the right time. And then knowing the right time to drop something like that.
Right.
All those things from the coaching tree of Bill Belichick, you know, and I don't know if Vrabel counts as that. He was a former player, never coached with him, I don't think. So you can't really call it part of the tree, but he is.
Yeah.
No two ways
about it. No, yeah.
But being able to transmit that message to your players in a way that they get it and they understand it is probably one of the hardest things a coach has to do, because some guys learn things different ways, some guys understand things different ways, and some guys just want to go out there and fly around and hit people. So the what Bill Belichick has done so well is funneling guys towards a common goal, and sometimes as a coach that's difficult to do.
617-779-7937. Steve DeAussi's here. I'm Butch Stearns. BC Clemson. It's a big event here in Boston. We're right outside of Alumni Stadium. We're taking your calls on all Boston sports. We'd love to talk to you about this game. Take a break in a minute, and we'll come back. 617-779-7937. That whole conversation we just had about do your job, about Vrabel, about Belichick, about all this and that, I want to try to tie it into this game tonight, and if I'm Steve Addazio, in your opinion, is it harder, fun, more challenging to get college kids who aren't in your system for a long time when you don't have the Rodney Harrisons and Teddy Bruschi's and Mike Vrabels and Willie McGinnis's to keep it going for so many years? What's it like trying to get them to play for the greater good? What's it like to know that you might have your team that might have a shot tonight because they're playing for each other, that they're doing their job with each other? That's got to be so much more challenging, but also the fun part of it. It's the reality of it. They're gone in 4 years or less.
It is, but the thing with that is that it's one of those – it's a thing that's an evolution. It's not something that you get from a pregame speech or from – yelling at a guy in practice or whatever. It's an evolution of that feeling where that you don't want to let the guy next to you down. You don't want to let the guy behind you down. And the closeness of the team, and that's part of that responsibility. A big part of that is the individuals you have on that team. If guys can put their own egos aside and say, okay, this is how we need to approach this, that helps with, especially in college, because you know you guys are. Most guys are playing 3 years max, you know, even if they come in as freshmen. Most of them aren't playing as freshmen, but that's the harder part for a coach and that's where you need team leadership. You need certain characters on that team that will bring other guys into the fold to want to, you know, the first thing you do as a football player when something great happens is you go find a teammate to hug. You're not sitting there, you know, you see it some now where guys are just, you know, tooting their own horn, but really good teams, when something big happens, most guys are looking for.
We saw it going back to Vrabel. Yep. We saw it Monday night in Dallas when the safety, what's his name? I can't even think of his name now. Really good player for them. Stood on the Dallas Star and did that.
Right.
Mike says, we don't do that around
here. No, absolutely not.
That's not what we're about.
No, because it's not about self-promotion. It's about team promotion. And the only way you promote the team over the individual is to push your own ego down. And I get it. You got to have a certain amount of ego anyway just to be playing in the league. But what's more important, your personal aggrandizement or the team winning games? And that's what matters. Most of the great players that I played with were so happy with the amount of the things that other guys were doing. I mean, you know, I remember getting my first sack ever with the New York Giants. The happiest person in the stadium was LT because he called a switch and he ended up covering the tight end that I was supposed to cover because he saw something. He called a switch. I got to blitz and I was wide open. And I made a sack, and he was happier for me than he was for the three sacks he had that game. You know, it's like, you know, and probably because he just introduced me to something that I probably never would have experienced without his direction. You know, so it's one of those things where in college I think you have to have guys on the team that appreciate and understand the big picture, and it's a much how do you put it?
Well, I think you nailed it. Leadership's even more important in college.
It is. And
because you're gone before you know it.
Yeah,
right?
And leadership isn't just yelling at guys and telling them to do this and telling them to do that. Leadership is
showing
guys
them the way, right?
And get them to do things that they don't necessarily sound fun. You tell the nose tackle he's going to have to take that guard and center and not let him off on the linebackers. That's not very exciting for a nose tackle, but.
It is in the Monday morning film meeting when they're giving you a round of applause because of what you did, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. But in college, there's more responsibility on the individual, I would think.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mike is on the line. Is it Mike?
Yes, it is.
Hey Mike, how you doing?
Hey, how are you guys? Two things. What's going to be the difference in Vrabel's defensive scheme when he was with Houston, now he's with Tennessee? I mean, the Patriots dismantled them, like, every time they were with Houston. And one other thing I'd like to say.
Let us attack that one first.
Okay.
I'll give a short answer to that, Steve. I would think when you're trying to figure out what your team is and what is your scheme defensively and your scheme offensively, Vrabel's now a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the defensive coordinator. He's not the linebackers coach. So he wants to implement it, but really it's – who his defensive coordinator is who's doing that, right? Like, he has less of a influence on that when the game rolls around than if he was the defensive coordinator.
Well,
no?
By the time the game rolls around, they've already had hour upon hour upon days of meetings,
right?
Deciding as a group what they want to do in certain situations. And the difference between a guy like Bill Belichick and a lot of other coaches is Bill Belichick has absolute total recall of any situation that's there. And it's not even a question. This comes from the length of time he's been coaching and the fact that he's brilliant when it comes to football. What matters for your defensive coordinator is that you're all on the same page, exactly what you're thinking of. And when something crazy happens, that the correct adjustment occurs to not just the coordinator, but the head coach and even a number of your players. It's got to be that situation. But it doesn't happen overnight. That's something that a lot of guys come into the league as college all-stars and they just want to play football. They don't understand that in the NFL, the talent on teams is not that far apart. From the worst team to the best team, the talent level is not monstrously apart like it is, let's say, Alabama versus Temple.
Well, this game as an example. We've said that, with all due respect to BC, there's double the amount of NFL draft picks that are going to be on the field for Clemson.
Right.
But I'm sure this was an eye opener for you when you got to the NFL. Everybody's big.
Yep.
Everybody's fast.
Absolutely.
Everybody was the best player in their college
right. And the idea that in the pros you got to put it together as a group. You might have been a great player in college on a good team, but still the eye was to, if you were a great player at Alabama, the eye was on the pros.
Yeah.
In the pros, you got to be able to put together that thought process, the idea that this is the end goal of where I wanted to be. Now, how long do I make this last, and how successful do we get?
Mike, you still there?
Yeah, one other thing.
Well, wait a minute. I just want to give you a short answer to direct answer to your question. I don't know. It's a great point by you. Brady has ripped apart the Houston Texans when he's played them. And Mike, that's where Mike cut his teeth as a coach. So, I mean, we'll see on Sunday if Vrabel's defensive.
But the problem is, what? Tell me something new you're going to show Brady.
Well, I know. But again, if I'm Mike Vrabel, and I have any chance, I would think that how intimately I know Brady and the things I learned with him being in the huddle, both offensively and against him in practice, I would think I got to make that work for me if I'm going to win this game.
Yeah, but the first thing you know, if you're honest with yourself, is that
he's going to have a checkmate move for you.
Yeah, you've got to, and now it comes down to how your players execute. Right. What's trying to sell?
What else you got, Mike?
I would like you to touch on the BC quarterback tonight. I think he's going to be the X factor. Because he scares me as a quarterback. Against weak teams, he's done well. But this is going to be his first true test. I mean, in the Purdue game, he threw 4 interceptions. To me, if he plays smart, they have a shot. If not, they're in big, big trouble.
I'll agree with a lot of that.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
If you're going to put the entirety of this game plan on the quarterback's shoulders, that you're not going to be successful. This is going to have to be a group effort of running backs, of play calling, of offensive line. He's not at that stage in his career yet where he's going to be that guy that takes his team on his shoulders and leads him to victory. He's going to be part of the process, but in that situation, give me a good, solid game where he doesn't turn the ball over and he makes some first, converts some third downs here and there. He doesn't have to be an all-star tonight, but he can't throw the game away.
We got to take a break, but I'll say this about Anthony Brown, and I've been thinking about it for 2 days now. Meter kept saying he's got to be a game manager. I think he's got to make some plays in this game.
You do, but
he's
you can't got force some the issue.
No, I understand. Yeah. He can't have the 4 interceptions. Right. He turns the ball over against this team. They could be down 21-0 before you know it.
Yep.
But I think if he makes some plays, limits himself to a turnover, maybe one pick or something, I think he's got some talent. I think BC's got some talent at the skill positions, well beyond A.J. Dillon.
Yep.
Tight ends, wide receivers. I think if he makes a couple of plays,
yep,
I think that could get the crowd into this game. I think you could, you know, see some good things happen.
Here's the one issue that you have as a quarterback is that he's never seen this kind of speed
right.
on defense.
Right.
And that's the biggest the same thing when you jump from
that
college
to pros. That
ball
floats
today. when you jump from college to pros, you're surprised at the speed. Right now, he's going to be facing a team that's faster than anyone he's ever faced.
Steve D'Ossi and Butch Stearns outside of Alumni Stadium for BC Clemson. We're back with more after this. There we go, Stevie. A little music from our generation when we were in college.
Woo.
How many nights were you on this campus with Springsteen blaring from some campus party or off-campus party?
A little Who.
Aerosmith.
Aerosmith, some Toto, some
Pat Benatar,
ELO,
Toto.
Who else?
We had American Pie by Don McLean.
That was before us, though, wasn't that?
Yeah, but that was a
standard. Yeah. It was a
standard.
That is like every college kid went through the same thing. You all of a sudden you're a freshman, you discover the Doors.
Right.
Oh wow, they're cool. when are they coming to town? No, they're not coming to town. You know, and then you go to your Led Zeppelin phase,
right.
You know, and a little bit of Who here and there, and you know, and then all of a sudden you're a musical expert, you know.
Steve D'Ossi, Butch Stearns are outside of Alumni Stadium. BC playing Clemson tonight, in case you haven't heard. Clemson's the number two team in the country. In 1983, when you played Alabama,
yeah.
It was at the old
Schaefer Stadium. Yeah.
Do you remember where they were ranked when you beat them?
Yeah, they were. I thought they were top 10.
They weren't number one, were they?
No, they weren't. They weren't number one at that point. I don't think so. I don't think they were, but they were up there.
How'd that game end up being played at Schaefer Stadium?
Because the next year BC went down there to play, and that's when
they worked
up.
The whole thing. Yeah, yeah, the whole home yep. and home and, type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, Flutie lit him up in that game, and then same thing with Texas A&M. We did Texas A&M down there,
right?
My junior year, and then they came up here my senior year, and or the other way around. Either way, we trumped.
Besides them. Alabama, what was the biggest game you played in? For you, for whatever reason.
I would think Penn State.
At Penn State?
No, this was at the same thing at the old Foxborough Stadium. And
I remember that game.
And I liked playing Penn State, even though they crushed us a couple of years. They had their national championship year with Kurt Warner and Todd Blackledge and them.
Right.
I liked playing them because Joe Paterno told me when they were recruiting me that I couldn't play linebacker at Penn State. It wouldn't work out. They wanted me to play offensive line. And actually, every school that I visited, Miami, Notre Dame, Penn State, all of them wanted me to play offensive line. And I never played offensive line in high school, not once.
You wanted to be a linebacker.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I ended up at BC. Because,
really?
Yeah, because first off, inner city kid, which, you know, nobody gets recruited that high out of the inner city. And I was one of the top 100 recruits in the country. And BC, I never even visited here. Never even talked to them, never visited, never even dealt with them. Then Barry Gallup, who's their director of football operations now, I think the great guy. He started talking to me, and I said, well, the only chance I'll come to BC is if I get to play linebacker. And then he goes, well, yeah, we can do that. So now I saw an opening. I said, and your linebackers suck. I want to start freshman year. You know, I had no idea. Yeah, I had absolutely no idea. But I was a 17-year-old kid. I didn't turn 18 until after my freshman season. But, and he said, well, you want to play linebacker? We'll give you a shot at linebacker. That's fine. And And they did.
So you went against Penn State, who was one of those teams that told you. Oh, you had them pinned up on your wall. That, you know, you couldn't
angry.
Put the rejection letter.
Because it's linebacker you.
Right.
Penn State was linebacker you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Of course I can play linebacker for Penn State. You got to be kidding me. And then Joe Paterno flipped around on me after the game. He said I was one of the best linebackers in the country. And
oh, really? Yeah. He killed you with kindness?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was, but and I wanted to be mad at him. I wanted to be like, I told you. And he was like, he comes up to me after son, that was a great game. You're one of the best linebackers in the country. And then he said, I was like, oh, I just wanted to hate you, but now come here and I'm hugging you. Get over here. I'm going to give you a hug. So, yeah, it's Penn State to me was I really just wanted to just, you know, I broke my thumb on Kurt Warner's head, like the second play of the game, and
wrap it.
And I didn't know it until I knew it was hurt. But then we stopped him. The only time we stopped him was like the first series, and they scored like 54 points that game, or whatever. But I go over to the sideline. I'm hurting, whatever. I'm just thinking it's a whatever. I dislocated or whatever. And they stop us. I go out to snap for the punt, and my thumb goes all the way back to my wrist. And I'm like, I call a timeout, and Bicknell's yelling, what are you doing, wasting the time? I said, Coach, look, and I'm taking my thumb, and I'm folding it back to touching my fingernail on my wrist. And he's like, what are you doing? And now I'm walking up and down the sideline showing, guys, check this out. This is ridiculous, right? And I'm like, so now halftime comes along, and you're in the locker room. All of a sudden, I realize that I'm hurting. Now I'm in pain. I'm like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. I go to the trainer and say, you got to do something with this. He takes a little piece of tape and secures my thumb
to
my finger.
Oh,
I'm
like,
what the hell is that? What are you doing? I'm talking about shooting it up, or I'm talking about putting it in a cast. Do something with that.
Right.
He goes, nope, that's all we can do for you. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It was just ridiculous.
Let's go back to the phone.
Oh, and then I got married the next day, and then I got operated on the day after.
Really?
How's that for a weekend?
There you go. Wow. Yeah. I don't think I could top that one. 617-779-7937. Bill is in Plymouth. If he's still there, hello, Bill.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey,
how
Bill.
You doing, Bill?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Great. Good.
You kind of stole my thunder a little bit with your question to Steve about the Alabama game. I was going to ask him what he thought the watershed moment was. That, I mean, before he got to BC in probably his first year, BC had a long track of kind of mediocrity. Every now and then they'd be 8-3 or whatever, but then you guys were one of the top teams in the country. And I was wondering what game you can kind of put your finger on and say, this is when we flicked the switch, that we knew we were elite.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if we ever reached, like, elite status, but we became, you know, a team that people had to pay attention to. But, I think maybe junior year when we went down to Clemson, they had a great team. And they ended up hitting a late field goal to tie us at 17-17, and they seemed happy about it, and we were angry, and we were supposed to be blown out and everything, and we were toe-to-toe with them the whole way, and they hit like a 51-yard or whatever it was. And I just remember thinking right then, that was early in the season too, right then I was like, okay, that was a tie, but you know what? That's a great team over there, and I got a bunch of – there's a bunch of really tough guys around me, both offensively and defensively.
That was your 82?
82, I think it was, down in
Bill, are you there, Bill, still? Is Bill still there?
No, Bill.
And then, okay. There was a couple other games, but that game there was – because Clemson's, that's a difficult place to play. I mean,
here's what I think of as I'm sitting out here tonight. I mean – you know, you and I have both been fortunate to carve out careers in sports, and we're Boston guys, and we're pretty much the same age. I'm two years older than you. I graduated dodging bullets in the mean streets of Braintree in 1978. And I was a football guy just like you. Grew up differently. Yep. I had no delusions of grandeur. I was recruited with my good friend Paul Canny by a guy named Vern Laws to go to Stonehill.
Yep.
I wasn't recruited anywhere else.
Right.
I called AIC. I almost went to Springfield. I was going to do this and that. I have no regrets. I played. I helped build the program at Stonehill College, right? But here, I want to get this to BC. Growing up, watching BC, it was always interesting to me because the best athletes in Boston, a lot of them would go to BC. If not, they got recruited and went to other places in the country.
Right.
Right? So when you came into BC, you either went to BC or, and you know this better than anybody, Steve, you went to Holy Cross.
Right.
Because that was a real rivalry, BC-Holy Cross.
Yep.
I remember getting with my buddy Mark McNeil, who went to Don Bosco, yep. who you played with, and yep. his buddy Bazoo, and a bunch of guys my yep. sophomore year in college, or junior year in college, driving up to Holy Cross to go to a game that you were playing. It was the first time I saw you play.
Yep.
You came out without your helmet on. You had that horse collar, the Steve Grogan pointed
yeah.
collar,
yeah, right.
number 99. You guys were so big to me. You yeah. were bigger than life.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wow. Those guys are huge. And I think you had Leo Smith, who was a running back
Leo
on
Smith
their team.
Was, yeah. Leo Smith, who looked like he was 30 years old in high
oh
school
my God.
At BC High.
But and that game was a knockdown, drag-out fight,
yeah.
that game.
Yeah.
But I guess my point making it is, growing up in that same generation, like, talk about the BC-Holy Cross rivalry, for example. That was real, wasn't it?
You
were playing against guys that you know, that they didn't go to BC. They weren't second-class citizens going
right.
to Holy Cross, because Holy Cross recruited then. They
right.
had scholarships.
I was oblivious to all that stuff when I was growing up. I was, you know, so busy just playing every sport I could play. And BC, the only thing BC meant to us is when we were living in the projects in Brighton, we'd come up here on Sunday morning or even late Saturday afternoon, and we'd rummage under the old stands, and we'd find money. And I remember I was happy. I found a $20 bill stuffed in a Bible. Well, one time underneath the stands, and we'd always find little nips, little bottles of it. And that was my only relationship with BC going up. We came to a game once in a while when we just were able to walk in, but it was never. And then I got here and I started seeing. You know, and I started talking to people about it about BC and Holy Cross and some of the other things that they had going on. And then, of course, Syracuse and West Virginia, and that, even though we were, you know, usually much better than Holy Cross, that game still meant a lot. And it was
right.
And the way I gauged it was, I'm playing against guys I played in the Shriners All-Star game,
right.
or the Gannis All-Star game.
Do you remember any of the guys that played for the Cross?
Yeah, yeah.
John Andreoli on those
bunch
guys.
Of guys. Yep.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where it was. That was my first experience of playing against
Mike
guys
Redding
that I knew.
Was that Mike Redding and Don Johnson? Didn't they play there? Mike's the coach
sure.
at Mansfield
yeah.
now.
Yeah,
I think
I'm not
he played
sure.
at the Cross.
That sounds familiar, though. But
yeah.
but I remember that being the first time I actually got to play against guys that I was either teammates with for the Shriners
right.
or the Gannis, and it was kind of cool. It was fun because and knowing them and talking to them, they were looking at us like, okay, well, you guys think you're so much better. We're just going to come in and slap you around. And I'm thinking, I think that way about Penn State, or I think that way,
yeah.
and these guys are thinking about it like that.
Well, that's BC going against Clemson tonight.
Yeah, exactly right.
Same
exactly
thing.
Right.
Just
and,
like that.
And I'm, there's always a little bit of crossover in those situations, but I had so much fun playing at Holy Cross against Holy Cross, which is because it was a local thing. It was a local thing.
Oh,
we
yeah.
loved it.
Reliving some glory days here outside of Alumni Stadium. Butch Stearns and Steve D'Ossi. We're back with more after this. There you go, Steve. Mark pulling a little hoo out for you.
Yep.
Daddy's got a squeeze box, baby.
Mama's got a squeeze box.
Mama's got a squeeze box.
Daddy
doesn't
Daddy
sleep.
Comes home,
whatever. 617-779-7937. We are outside of Gate E at Alumni Stadium. We're a little over 2 hours until kickoff of BC and Clemson. A couple of the buses have pulled up, and they are bringing all the equipment now out of these buses into the athletic gate here. And they're going to. Oh, their luggage from last night. Okay. So we'll see what goes on here now. But the atmosphere is pumping up here at Alumni Stadium as the Eagles are about to take on the number two team in the country, the Clemson Tigers. We're taking your phone calls. If you'd like to join us at 617-779-7937. Hey, if you're a BC Eagles fan, a BC football fan, a local college fan and always complain you never get to talk college sports on WEI. Well, the next couple hours is your chance right here at 617-779-7937. My name is Butch Stearns alongside is Steve D'Ossi, class of 1984 at BC, and we're here talking about this game and talking about more. So you graduated in 84, so
yes.
you did not play in the Miracle of Miami game. That was the year after.
Miami never scored that many points. What are you, crazy?
When you what were your recollections of Doug Flutie as a teammate? Because he wasn't Doug Flutie then. He became Doug Flutie the year after.
No, right? No. We already knew during that his junior season that he was going to be one of the leading Heisman candidates going on. And we saw it early on. In training camp his freshman year, we had a number of quarterbacks going down, and he ended up running scout team against
he was recruited as a defensive back.
That's right? Why he wore 22, I think. And yeah. The legend has it, I'm not 100% sure, but that he was like a last-second recruit, too, that some kid from New Jersey or something backed out, and they brought Doug in. And then he started running scout team against the defense. We had a very good defense, and he starts, like, just shredding our defense and went to the point where we were getting angry, and we're going after that scout offense, and we felt bad because, you know, we're going against – you know, young guys that aren't prepared for that first-team defense to go after them just because the quarterback was shredding us. And I saw him come in. I think it was his first game he came in was at Penn State. And
I remember that.
I don't know if it was John Locklear or somebody that went down, but he comes in, and it was almost like Coach was throwing him to the wolves because, you know, Penn State was rolling up on us. And he came in and did way more than hold his own. He came back and put a little scare in him in the second half. From then on, you weren't surprised how well he did because you saw what he did in practice. You saw what he did when he was given opportunities in games, and the kid was just fearless from the get-go.
Well, I'll tell you a story from two quick stories about him in high school. I went to Braintree High School. He went to Natick. He was a freshman or sophomore when I was a senior, and we should have had a much better football team. We just weren't a football town. But anyway, we played Natick. Natick and Walpole were football towns.
Yep.
And Doug was holding, this is what he was doing at the time because they were so stacked. I think he was a freshman. They were up like 30-0 in the third quarter. He was holding for kicks.
Yeah.
And they were attempting a field goal because they had nothing better to do.
Yep.
And there was a snap, and he went to hold it, and he bobbled the snap, which allowed him to scramble around, and he threw a touchdown.
Right.
And when he did it, I remember him. I remember I was like, wow, that was pretty damn good.
Was just supposed to be
so
holding.
I saw him a couple years later after I get to know him, and I said, "You did that on purpose, didn't you?" He goes, "No, I didn't." I said, "Yes, you did. Yes, you did. You didn't notice." Then the other thing I'll never, ever forget, there was a game at Braintree High School when he was a junior, I think, as a quarterback there, and he went over to Tom Lamb, the head coach, and there was like he took the ball on the 5-yard
legendary
line.
Legendary coach Tom Lamb, by the way.
Yeah, he on the 5-yard, Steve, with no timeouts, he got them in field goal position. It was like a 30-yard field goal. It was like 5 ticks on the clock. And he's over on the sidelines flailing up his arms like this, and Lamb goes like this, "All right, go." And he goes out there and he kicks a game-winning 30-yard field goal to beat Braintree, and they ended up going to the Super Bowl. And I'll never forget this. In the Boston Globe the next day after the miracle in Miami, somebody ran into his dad after the game and said, "Is this the greatest thing you've ever seen your son do?" He goes, "Well, in college."
Yeah.
He goes, "In high school at Braintree High, he kicked a field goal." And I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
That's great. That's great.
But to the point I think is a bigger one is Flutie was one of those guys that he just had something special. He really did it.
He
ended up seeing it at every level.
I'll tell you what else he had going for him that was, in my mind, almost – as special was Tom Coughlin as an offensive coordinator.
Really?
Tom Coughlin saw his talent early on, and Tom adjusted his offense accordingly. He didn't scrap his offense, but he knew certain things would work much better with Flutie, and he started bringing those things to the forefront with Doug. And he was a big part of Doug's success, and I'm sure Doug would tell you the same thing. As tough as Tom was to deal with sometimes, he was a very hard taskmaster. And because Doug could freelance as well as anybody, and that would make Coughlin ballistic, you know, Tom, the way he is. I think that was as big a part of the success, too. And he was just, you talk about an incredible talent with incredible – I mean, there were quarterbacks –
Well, his instincts were off the charts.
There were quarterbacks with better arms. There were quarterbacks with that could run better. But the combination of fearlessness and confidence, not cockiness, confidence, and ability was what made him special.
Mark, are we taking a break here? Sorry, but
that'd be lovely.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. It's Butch Stearns and Steve D'Ossi. We'll take more of your calls. We'll reminisce a little bit more about BC football. We'll talk about this game coming up. Anything you'd like to chat about with us, we're here for you. It's BC against Clemson. We're live outside of Alumni Stadium on WEEI.
Oh,
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.